Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for dialing in. We're very happy to have you. A few words of background for those who don't know this already. On the 19th December 2010, Belarus had a presidential election. Hopes were high because the European Union had seen indications that the regime of President Alexander Lukashenko might be willing to loosen its control over Belarusian politics in return for some benefits from the West. And many European politicians and people here in Washington hoped they could persuade Lukashenko to reduce his reliance on Russia and relinquish some control. And the election outcome showed that these hopes were entirely unfounded. On December 19th, large numbers of people, some estimate the crowd, up to 40,000 in the center of Minsk, demanded liberalization and protested what they saw as blatant vote rigging. And the people who demonstrated in this way were brutally dispersed by riot police. And of the eight Belarusian presidential candidates who participated in this election, I believe seven were arrested. If that's incorrect, I hope someone will correct me. We've seen a whole series of reprisals against the opposition and apparently many innocent people who were simply there on the scene the night of those protests. Needless to say, the hopes that were placed in this election have now been rendered completely spurious, and it remains to be seen how the West can react effectively in this situation and what the consequences for the Belarusian public will be as we move forward. President Lukashenko ended up winning, by the count of the Electoral Commission of the state of Belarus, around 80% of the vote. They claim 90% turnout. The opposition judges all of this to be highly dubious, and many independent election observers, I believe at this point, probably agree. So, first of all, let's talk to the head of the Radio Free Europe Belarus service director, Alexander Lukashuk. Sasha, tell us what we should know.
Thank you, Chris. Hello, everyone. Covering elections in Belarus, which have never since 1996 been free or fair, is quite easy and also quite challenging. We cannot really analyze programs, candidates, campaigns, because the whole procedure is a ritual for a different purpose and varies only by the degree of violence authorities use. And it's also challenges, unfortunately, for the same reasons. The degree of the violence has been on the rise all these years, and on December 19th, it has reached its peak. There hasn't been such a number of people beaten, arrested, fined, imprisoned in Europe since Polish martial law of Solidarity times. RFERL, for those who perhaps don't quite know, broadcast to Belarus 8 hours daily in Belarusian, and of course we maintain a web operation. On the election night, we got 8 additional hours on air, which is short waves. We are not allowed to rebroadcast inside the country. We're the only RFERL target country in Europe which doesn't have local retransmission. So we covered everything which was happening live. We walked on the streets. And as a result, of course, as everybody else, we got our correspondents beaten, the equipment broken, arrested, sentenced. Some of our people spent 15 days in prison, to say nothing of us, as dozens of them who contribute regularly to us with their blogs, photos. They were behind bars. As far as we can judge by the web statistics, number of visitors and all other web statistics broke all-time records. It was by times more. We were also happy to permit use of our product to CNN, BBC TV, Associated Press, other media organizations. We've never had such a response from the audience as during these days. Now, that's what we did then. What we are doing now, I'll reduce myself to a reporter at this moment. Today, since it is Monday, 10th of January, in the morning, we reported 4 KGB raids on apartments and offices of different activists in the only one city of Brest. In the city of Borisov, KGB raided the office of an independent newspaper. There's only half a dozen left. Confiscated all computers, phones, fax machines, photo cameras, and they also went after that to the apartment of the editor-in-chief to continue this confiscation of all equipment. Also today, the biggest political party in Belarus, Belarus Popular Front, got a notice. It will be evicted from its office in 2 months' time. Also today, we found out that a youth activist who was taken, who was a student, he was taken from the university after passing an exam by KGB. He resurfaced and found out that he got 18 days of arrest. And there are about many other similar cases which happened today on Monday, January 10th in Belarus. We just don't know. We got today a unique recording while KGB was searching the office of an apartment in Brest. One of the people who was there switched on the recorder, and we got 45 minutes of a KGB harassing a person, engaging in a dialogue, and the girl telling him, why don't you arrest Lukashenko for the stolen elections, and why are you getting red in your face? It's quite an amazing audio. You can find it on our site, www.svoboda.org. The night, just let me finish with this, it looks like a long winter night has come to Belarus. And how long will it be? I don't know. On New Year night, we broadcast perhaps the most unique program in the history of Radio Free Europe, Voices of Solidarity. We ask dissidents, intellectuals, politicians to read the names of people who sacrificed their freedom for democracy. And, well, I never thought that I might, in my journalistic career, teach an American president or a senator Belarusian pronunciation, but they were very willing, from President Bush to Senator Lieberman to Francis Fukuyama to Andre Glucksmann in Paris and to Carl Gershman of National Endowment of Democracy. It was a snowball effect. And if anything comes good out of everything of this, this is the rise of solidarity, which I personally have never seen before. And one final phrase. One of the hundreds of calls and comments we received after that broadcast of Voices of Solidarity, I will read you. I heard my mother's name read on Radio Liberty. I am so proud of her, I will burst. Thank you. Christian?
Yes, I'm sorry. We're dropping the sound here. We've lost the audio a couple of times.
That's fine.
Can you hear me all right?
If anybody is interested, I can send you my remarks, at least in a summary of them.
Yes, that might be a good idea. I think we're fine for the moment, though. Let's now hear from Jan Maksymiuk. Who's the senior multimedia editor of the Radio Free Europe Belarus service. Jan?
Okay, thank you. I will test a little bit about the reactions to Belarus elections. In an immediate reaction to the election, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe monitoring mission in Belarus said that the elections failed to give Belarus the new start it needed. And that was the phrase said by Tony Lloyd, who was the head of the short-term observation mission. And the full assessment of the election are still in the coming, but I think that it will be negative as it was immediately after the election. And as to other reactions, we are still waiting for them. But there was one country who already just reacted to Belarus election. It was Poland. As you may remember, Foreign Minister of Poland Radoslaw Sikorski and Foreign Minister of Germany Guido Westerwelle visited Minsk before the election. It was in November, and they promised just substantial economic and financial aid to Belarus in exchange for more or less free elections. But so if anybody in the West was, I would say, unpleasantly surprised by what happened on December 19, it was Radoslaw Sikorski in the first place. So it is not surprising that Poland reacted to this election as the first country in Europe. So in first reaction, Poland cancelled fees for national visas for Belarusians. Poland had also drafted a list of Belarusian officials who will be banned from entering the country. Well, since I was told this unofficially, so I won't say how many people are on this list, but I will tell you that this list is much longer than the list that was introduced by Brussels in 2006, immediately after the former election. And at that time, it was 40 or 41 names on that list. Poland also promised that it will take students who will be excluded from Belarusian universities and colleges for a political activity. And Poland also increased its own financial support for Belarus civic society and independent media. And as far as I know, Poland is going to organize what it call a conference of donors, most likely in early February, just to collect funds to support Belarus civic society, opposition, and repressed people. Now, as regard to Brussels' reaction, apart from statement of condemnation from different officials in Brussels, we are still waiting for some concrete steps. The European Parliament is going to discuss the situation in Belarus on Wednesday, when the committees for Foreign Policy Committee and Eastern Neighborhood and Relations with Belarus are to decide on the reactions to the current situation in Belarus. And the EU Council of Ministers, 27 foreign ministers of the European Union, are to discuss Belarus on January 31st. Well, what should we expect from the EU regarding Belarus? As we know, Lukashenko is not very sensitive to financial incentives. He rejected the offer of EU assistance, which were brought to him by Sikorsky and Westerwelle. So I think there will be no carrots this time. What about sticks? I think Belarus may return to Brussels may return to the former visa ban that was introduced in 2006 on 41 Belarusian officials. This ban was formally it's still in place, but 36 officials were exempted from this ban. And only it covers now only five Belarusian officials. Lukashenko can travel west, so I think Brussels may return to this visa ban. As for harsher sanctions, I was more tangible. I would say economic sanctions. I'm in doubt. It is unlikely that Brussels will call economic sanctions on Belarus, because first reason, Europe is still suffering from an economic crisis, and whether you like it or not, Belarus is an economic player, even if minor, on the European market as a whole, and any tangible economic sanctions on Belarus, I would say, would upset the overall economic balance in the continent. And the second reason is that Belarus is very, for Europe, is a very important oil and gas transit country. And if any harsh economic sanctions were imposed on Belarus, I'm not sure how Alexander Lukashenko would react. I think he could even just stop gas and oil supplies to Europe. And I think that Brussels is also unlikely to formally call for a blockade of assistance program to Belarus that have been devised by International Monetary Fund or the World Bank. I think it is more likely that individual countries, for example, like Poland, that will try to put obstacles to releasing such assistance funds to Belarus rather than the European Union as a whole.
Right.
But I think, and just to sum it up, I think even reinstating the European Union visa sanctions against Belarus may not be so easy in the corridors of power in Brussels, because Brussels has devised, as you may know, the so-called Eastern Partnership initiative, in which Belarus is a key element. So if Belarus is excluded from this initiative, then the Eastern Partnership may simply become, irrelevant for Brussels as a political instrument. I think that the Stefan Füle, European Commissioner for Enlargement and Eastern Neighborhood Policy, would be very unhappy just to abandon this Eastern Partnership idea. Since I interviewed him a year ago, I know that he personally believes in this idea, and he also believes that, at least he hopes that he can persuade Minsk to behave more correctly.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Okay, Jan, thank you very, very much. We really do appreciate that. I'm sure there will be questions about how the West should respond in this situation. Now we'd like to speak to Yeva Nikolaeva, who is the daughter of presidential candidate Vladimir Nikolaev. I'm sorry, I don't speak Belarusian, so I apologize if my pronunciation is not so great.
You pulled it off quite well.
It was your father, Yeva, if I'm not mistaken, who was beaten on the night of the elections, ended up in the hospital. Please give us an update on his condition, and if you could also tell us what you think the West should do in response to President Lukashenko's policies and his so-called re-election. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Eva Nikolaeva, and it shouldn't be me now speaking to you. Right now, here in this studio, should have been sitting my father, Vladimir Nikolaev, together with other leaders of New Belarus. However, even if they won the elections, they were severely beaten and thrown to jail. My father, on the evening of the elections, even before the closing of the voting, of the he was brutally attacked, beaten, and they took him to the hospital where he was diagnosed with a head injury and a concussion. And in a few hours, he was in the emergency care unit. Men in black, without showing any papers, they just run into his room, and holding his wife while she was screaming, they dragged him out of this room because he couldn't walk himself. After that, for a week, we didn't have any news where my father is, what's happening to him, in which condition he is. And after a week, finally, his lawyer was called to the KGB prison, and we found out that he's alive. And that he is one of the seven arrested candidates, presidential candidates. The horror of the situation is that also all the seven candidates were arrested before even the official results of the elections were published, at the moment where they each in and every one of them could have been the president of tomorrow of the Republic of Belarus. After that, we heard last week that again he almost died in prison because he had really bad blood pressure problems, and his blood pressure isn't so high, so that he lost consciousness. And only by coincidence, there was one person in his cell who didn't go for a walk, so he saw that my father is unconscious, so they called the doctor and they saved him. But even after that, my father wasn't hospitalized. His wife Olga is old. We are all the time trying to get him hospitalized because we are really afraid for his life. Now we are afraid not only for his freedom, but also for his life. As well as the other candidates who were severely beaten, such as, for example, Andrei Sannikov, who, according to his lawyer, he has a leg injury, he cannot walk, he doesn't get medical help either. Your colleague, journalist from the Charter 97. Both journalists were also beaten. We don't know in which conditions they are. It's an urgent situation. And this is why we... to be honest, I mean, I've joined now the campaign. We are going from one European city to another, and we are telling the people and the ministers and the governments what's really happened in Belarus. However, the time is going on, and my father, he's been almost for a month now in prison without medical help in his condition. We don't know if he's even able to talk now normally, you know. And nothing has been done so far, and this is why, you know, I don't want to be diplomatic anymore. I'm sick and tired, with all my respect, of the analytics who say that, you know, in this situation it's very difficult for Europe or for the West to take serious steps because of the economical situation, because of the, you know, to hell with real politics. This is human lives now on the line, and we are talking about human lives and about all these people in prisons now who face this horrible sentence of 15 years in prison for the crimes that they not only haven't committed, that it never happened, really. This is a completely staged case. And the authorities right now, they are staging this case. And this is a step back to 1937 in the Soviet Union, where, you know, they had this shows where they convicted innocent people because they, as an excuse for repressions and as an excuse to clear and to and to kill all the independent thought and all the democratic movement.
Thank you very much for that, Yeva. I have a question, which I would like to ask all of you. How do we explain the remarkable viciousness of the government response in this particular case? As you mentioned, I think, Alexander, Lukashenko has often practiced violence against his political opponents, but this assault on the presidential candidates, on this large number of people gathering in the square, why did Lukashenko react so viciously in this particular case? It does seem kind of extraordinary.
Well, it's Alexander talking. My simple explanation would be that this time Lukashenko behaves this way only when it is really central to himself, and the only thing which he cares is staying in power. Looks like that at these elections, at this time, he had reasons to believe that he was close to losing his power.
Right, so this is really ultimately a reflection of his own of his own nervousness and perhaps even the weakness of his regime ultimately.
I have to add that in these elections, for the first time, we have a proof that the elections were that the results were rigged, and we have proof from that he didn't get as much votes as he claimed, and that in fact there should be the second round of elections. So we think that this reaction was provoked by the fact that he was really, you know, as any dictator, he really believes that the people love him, and for the first time he got proof that no, this is not the case, that people of Belarus want him out.
Interesting. Thanks very much for that, Yeva. I think we'll probably hear more about that in the question and answer session that will now follow. Please, I'd like to open it up for questions from our listeners.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. And our first question comes from Will England of the Washington Post. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is a question for Ms. Nikolaeva. Could you, and I had a follow-up question as well. Could you talk a little bit more specifically about what countries in Europe you've been to? And I gather you have not received any expressions of tangible assistance?
No, actually, we now been to Poland, Lithuania, and now in Czech Republic. And tomorrow we are traveling to Berlin and then to Brussels. And I have to say that in Poland, we Polish people, they and they don't need to be persuaded, you know, they know very well what happened, and we got we were told that Poland will take very serious steps, and it will be one of the countries definitely that will drive the very strict position in the European Union. Lithuania is in a bit more difficult situation because of the difficulties between the same the parliament and the presidency, so they kind of they have actually as a country at the moment they have kind of a double position. However, we met with the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Ažubalis, and he also assured us that Lithuania will do everything to free the political prisoners in Belarus. And now we just have had a meeting here in Poland, in Prague, with MFA, and Czech Republic is also very, very strict on the regime, and we were asked very concrete questions about how Czech Republic can help Belarusian people now to get out of this horrible situation.
Thank you. And if I might just ask a quick follow-up to anyone, I'm interested if you could describe the status and role of the Internet in this whole situation.
Status?
Internet.
Internet. Well, on the day of the election, there were problems. We're just assessing Internet. But the most Belarusian independent website where, you know, aware that such problems may appear, because in previous major election campaigns there were problems that some sites were blocked or just there was problems with accessing the sites. So some of them, you know, just prepared mirror sites all over the world just to get to sidestep such problems. As for now, I think everything back to normal. We don't, to the best of my knowledge, we don't have any problems with internet.
Let me just interrupt, if I may. Didn't the Belarusian government actually create fake opposition websites that then drew off traffic and essentially diverted traffic away from the actual opposition websites? I heard this was a tactic that they were using.
Yes, such thing did happen, and even they created a fake site of Radio Svoboda, if I'm not wrong, right? So it's in, I would say, in the armory of Belarusian special services, such tricks.
And I have to say that now, thanks to Web 2.0, actually, we have a lot of people, you know, for example, from my generation or younger, who create this kind of islands of civic activities, and they agree, or you know, through Facebook, for example, or Twitter, to organize different kind of you know, little symbolic gestures. You can't really do now a lot in the streets of Minsk, but for example, there are people who agreed that you know, they cannot go in the square, so they will take you know, the flag, and they will stand in front of their own buildings, you know, one by one, and in this way show their solidarity to the regime. So to the political prisoners. So there is a lot of this kind of civic movement and solidarity in the people among the people of Belarus, who are of course now very much afraid, but they show a lot of bravery in this situation, and thanks to the internet they can also connect to each other.
Excellent. So thank you very much for that. So do we have another question?
Yes, our next question comes from Ginia Stanova. Please go ahead.
Hi. My question is, I think, primarily to Mr. Maksymyuk. I'm interested in, would you expect the European Parliament resolution to suggest the EU do? I think the resolution is expected on Wednesday. And then a follow-up, what kind of actions and possibly additional sanctions can we expect from the U.S.? Thank you.
Well, as I said in my opening remarks, I do expect that the European Parliament may suggest just, you know, reinstating a visa ban against Belarusian officials. Maybe this time this list will be expanded, because I would say originally after the former elections in 2006 there were 41 persons on the list. And there are still five of them on this list, while the other were exempted. So they may just reinstate this list. As for any harsher sanction, I don't expect that they will do something in this direction. As for the United States, we all know that Washington takes a much tougher stance on Belarus than Brussels. So we may expect, and there are still not only the visa ban, but some economic sanctions, some ban on economic activities, on trade with some Belarusian enterprises. So one can expect that this list of economic entities, which will be banned from selling their products in the United States, may be extended.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Another question?
Yes, our next question comes from Igor Dyahenko. Please go ahead.
Hi, Voice of America, Washington. Can you hear me, guys?
Not really.
Yes, well, but there's
very poor
some interference there.
Yeah.
Hello? Guys, can you hear me?
More or less, but
there's a lot of buzzing on your line, so I'm going to have to kind of cut it in and out.
Hello?
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. Okay, my question is sort of a follow-up question to the question that moderator asked about the viciousness of the Lukashenko's regime towards the candidates and the people who came to the square on the 19th. It's clear to me what happened there, but I cannot understand one thing, why the regime is so inhumane and vicious towards the candidates who are currently in prison, and most of them are very sick. So my question will be probably directly to Yeva Nikolaeva. Why do you think Lukashenko is so afraid of them at this point? Why is he so inhumane to them? Because I cannot imagine that anybody can take power from him at this moment.
Well, actually, I have to say that at this moment, exactly at this moment, power can be taken away from him. And the West also holds a position where it can help Belarusian people in this situation, and it can help to take the power away from him by strict economic sanctions and political pressure. However, this is exactly why they are so nervous now. You know, this is exactly why they are doing all these unreasonable steps. Why they're sending emissaries to talk to the West? And we know that Martynov, the Minister of Foreign Affairs from Belarus, will be already met with Lady Ashton in Brussels. At least it was in the press that this meeting is planned. The regime is very much afraid, Exactly, because the people of Belarus showed so much support to the oppositional candidates and to the democratic forces. And the inhumane treatment and the tortures, because what's happening now to people is that they are being tortured in prison. Because they are not being not given access to the medical help is a torture in this case. And they are being pressured also psychologically they are pressuring these candidates and the other arrested people into asking forgiveness and, you know, going and saying, we are so sorry, we actually, the regime needs this kind of apology from them. And we are afraid that in this pressure, in this will that they want the candidates to apologize to Lukashenko, they might be using they are using these inhumane methods.
If I may add, in authoritarian, it's Alexander Lukashuk. In authoritarian regimes, things don't happen on themselves. They come from one source. So this source is Alexander Lukashenko himself. And there are two reasons, both rational and irrational. Irrational is his own psychology, his own brutality, his own need to satisfy these sadistic, I would say, instincts. During the briefing after the election, several times he said, so candidate Nikolaev was hit by clubs on his head several times. So what? Are you a man? If you're a man, so what if you are hit by club? So he was hit a couple of times by a club on his head. So what? If you're a man, take it. That's one thing. Another thing is, of course, rational. It's teaching a lesson to everybody else, frightening everybody else.
Do we have another question?
It appears that was our last question.
One issue I'd just like to bring up very quickly, if I may. We haven't spoken about the role of Russia in all of this. Perhaps some of you would like to comment on that. To what extent have Lukashenko's actions on election day and during the aftermath come from the fact that his relations from Russia seem to have improved again, and Russia has essentially given him carte blanche to do what he wants?
If I may say something, this whole situation with Belarus is pretty much due to this game that the West, that Europe was playing against Russia, and Russia was playing against Europe, because they both wanted control over Belarus. And as soon as Lukashenko would go and say, you know, Russians are bad, then the Europeans would go, yes, here's the carrot for you, and then the Russians would do the same. And in this process, people were hurt. And yes, we know that Lukashenko went to Russia and signed some papers, and this is a secret at the moment what he has actually signed. Maybe you know more about it.
Well, I can only, it's Jan Maksimyuk speaking, I can only agree with it that Lukashenko did make a deal with Russia, and that was the crucial reason why he just behaved and surprised everybody. Actually, he spit in the face of Europe, you may say, because Lukashenko before the election was sure that whatever happens, Russia won't protest. Everything looks differently, I would say, 2 or 3 weeks before the elections, but then after he made a deal about the oil supplies, he was sure that Russia will accept everything he will do in Minsk. So answering directly to your question, I would say the Russia's behavior, Russia's acceptance of his victory was crucial for Lukashenko.
Okay, thanks very much. If there are no other outside questions, we should probably wrap it up. Any others?
We currently don't have any more outside questions.
Okay. So thank you very much, all of you, for participating. We greatly appreciate your help. And please, all of you who are calling in, feel free to contact Radio Free Europe journalists if there's anything else you need to know. And we will also be happy to provide you with contact information for Ms. Nikolaeva. And thank you very much, all of you, for participating.
Thank you, Christian.
Thank you.